someone safe. So what I want people to understand, particularly those who have children, mothers and parents, that you will not put your 12 or 13 years old sons in such a situation where you don't know what's going to happen to them, but you think it's safer for them to leave than to stay. So we were in a very bizarre...
That's crucial.
Indeed.
Because why are they doing it? They've got this, they've got that. Because there's bombs dropping.
Yeah, people just assume, that's the issue. People assume, and you hear politicians talk about, you know, this crisis has become crisis because it hits a British shore, but it's crisis for the people who are making the journeys, who are going through this hardship and difficulties because we don't have a better way of dealing with them. So I always sense a feel of, you know, I wouldn't have left if it wasn't for the conflict which claimed my family's lives, and almost every Afghan have lost someone to the war. It's not just the last 18 or 17 years, it's been for the last 35 to 40 years. And Afghans used to be the largest refugee population in the world and the largest asylum seekers in Europe until 2014.
Yes,
obviously,
Syria.
The Syrian war has started the civil war. So people need to understand the causes rather than looking at the consequences. And I think we owe it to them to show, you know, to show leadership, to welcome them with dignity and show solidarity with them. And it's our moral duty and legal obligation. We shouldn't just say, oh, why don't France take all? Why don't Germany? Why do they come in here? A small
because they do. I mean, France and Germany, I think, per capita, do more than we do. But you know how powerful and toxic the rhetoric can be in these sort of contexts. You probably know it better than I do. So it helps to imagine a 12-year-old you, actually, because that takes away the question of, well, why on earth are you trying to get to a safe place? The answer is clearly because where you are is too terrifying. And whatever risks you're running, you've got a better chance.
It's nothing compared to what it is there. And that's why.
So what happened when you were 12? Where did you go first?
So my mother and my family decided that it was not safe for us to either join the Taliban as children soldiers or to work for the Afghan government. Either way, we would have perhaps lost our lives.
Those are your choices.
Yeah, it was
join
a serious
the Taliban,
situation.
Join the army, or join the civil service, or just run.
Just run, yeah. And so it was not my choice. And my mother saved my life, but she also lost me in the process. It's been 12 years I've not seen her. So I was handed over to smugglers and traffickers. I was in their hands, in their mercy, in their hands for the next 12 months or so, or at least half of the way. So went through about 10 countries, 11,000 miles. I was in prison in almost every country that I went through. Forget being treated as a child. I wasn't treated as a human being. When people say, why don't people claim asylum in the first country? Iran imprisoned me. Turkey imprisoned me. Bulgaria deported me back in the middle of December in snow. Literally, they were pointing their gun at us. There was no humanity or sense of...
And you were still 12, 13 years old.
Yes, I was 13 when I arrived to the UK, but I was 12 in the journey. They couldn't care less about my age.
Of course.
And unfortunately, they were treating me very inhumanely. So things hasn't improved. Actually, things has got worse.
Yes.
Across Europe now, in Serbia, in Macedonia, in Greece, I mean, other places in Hungary. So I had to go through this ordeal back and forth, like snakes and ladders, and... And I wish I didn't have to go through it. And now the reason I wrote the book and the reason I'm advocating and campaigning for refugees' rights, I want people to really put themselves in our shoes and to understand, you know, we're not taking this lightly. This is a serious decision for a family. And my mother, you know, she said to me and my brother, no matter how bad it gets, don't come back and hold on to each other's hands. But as soon as the journey began, I was separated from my brother. I didn't see him for the next 14 months. And I had to just not give up and continue to find my brother, determination to find my brother, and to not let my mom's down.
I know you're kind enough to listen to the program, so you'll know I'm not often, I rarely struggle for a question, and I hope I don't ask stupid ones very often, but I'm about to ask you a stupid one, if you don't mind.
There's no such thing as stupid questions.
Oh, let's wait and see. When were you most frightened?
I think when I was crossing the sea from Turkey to Greece, we were packed into a very small boat designed for about 20 to 30 people, and they put 120 of us in there. We were supposed to be in Greece in 4 hours. It took us 48 to almost 50 hours. We were in the sea. I saw death on many occasions, but here I was certain I was going to die. And our boat broke down. Our boat were capsized. If the Greek Coast Guard had not rescued us within minutes, we were just very, very lucky. And I remember asking God, not here, not now, not like this, because my mom will not know what has happened to me. And my family will live in hope that I will return home, but I will never return home.
But you still haven't contacted your mum.
I'm speaking to my mum.
Oh, you've got messages to her, so
I talked to her.
Safe.
Yes,
she knows her decision was right.
Yes, as I said, I mean, she saved me, but she also lost me in a sense that I'm not the same Gulwali that I was 12 years ago.
What do you mean by that?
Because it's a huge sacrifice to be a refugee. I mean, my grandma passed away, who was the most beloved to me. I was not there. My little sister passed away. I was not there.
I'm sorry.
And those are the things. My brother got married. My other sister got married. And when I talk to my mom have very little understanding of what I do. I told her I wrote a book. She said, you have far too much time to write books and to travel.
I get the picture. So you've moved into a different orbit.
Completely different lifestyle that I have. And it's sad because I'd rather be spending my childhood or my youth with my loved ones. I don't want to be in this situation. I want people to understand if I had a choice, I would be with my family. I'm here because of circumstances. Now, I'm grateful to the British people. Yes, the government, actually, I struggled. The system was such, it took me 5 years to get a recognition to be a refugee. The system is very dehumanizing. It makes you feel a liar, a criminal, a suspect. It took me 11 years to get a settled status, which was a few months ago, and it'll take me another year to get citizenship. I mean, in this whole Brexit debate and what's been happening, I haven't been able to have a voice. I haven't been able to have a say, even though it will affect my life, my children's lives, and my future. And that's what is very bothering me.
Well, I wish we'd given you more of a voice today. We haven't even got onto how on earth you ended up carrying an Olympic torch in 2002.
That was a very proud moment. That's what it means to be in this country. But that's what Britain means to me. No matter where you come from, who you are, you can still succeed, you can still achieve. That was once in a lifetime opportunity. But unfortunately, the 23rd of June was the date, 2012, I heard it, that is associated with Brexit date, which kind of doesn't...
It was 4 years later.
Yeah,
thank you. We should do this again, because we haven't had enough time to talk at length. But your book, The Lightless Sky, is reissued in March with an extra 10,000 words, which will answer any questions you have. But that bottom line there about this being a country where anything is possible for anyone, I think it's a timely reminder of
Thank
what
you.
Matters. Kulwali Pasale, author of The Lightless Sky, My Journey to Safety as a Child Refugee. Thank you for your time. It's 1 o'clock. Here's Sheila.
Thank you very much.